Hey,
folks, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bresha.
Yo, it's the Tornado, Sonny Penny here.
And we're coming at you live with another edition of the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show. Tonight we have a special guest in the second hour, Riddick Big Daddy Bo, who we were just talking about was involved in probably one of the most craziest scenes in boxing history when the fan man, they called him, flew into the ring in the middle of the fight and promptly got his ass kicked. I think I heard stories.
He got the shit kicked out of him. You know what? I liked Riddick from the time he started, and I like I said, I remember him coming out of the 88 Olympics, as did our guest last week, Roy Jones Jr. So these are two guys that I really grew up watching because I was really getting into boxing around 86, 87. So the 88 Olympics was the first one that I really followed pretty heavily. And those guys were another former guest of ours, Merciless Ray Mercer. We had Anthony Hembrick missing the bus. That was from the 88 Olympics. Guys like Michael Carbajal. I apologize for forgetting even some of the guys on there. There was such a talented squad. Obviously Roy Jones Jr. got screwed in that Olympics. Ray Mercer was a gold medalist. Riddick Bo lost in the finals to Lennox Lewis. So when he turned pro, I remember watching him in some of his four-round fights just starting out. And another thing that I always liked about Riddick was he was a, fighter, a protege of the great Eddie Futch, who I still consider probably the greatest trainer in boxing. Boxing history is Eddie Futch has since passed away. Rick used to call him Papa Smurf because he was, tiny little guy, very soft-spoken. But even though Eddie did not speak very loud, his words commanded respect. And so that always endeared me to Rick. I was never a fan of his manager, Rock Newman. Rock Newman was the complete opposite, very loud, very obnoxious. And I think it got Riddick into some controversial situations that, he really didn't need. Obviously I remember a shoving match on USA with, I think it was people from Ray Mercer's camp. Obviously there was the thing with Elijah Tillery on USA when Riddick knocked Tillery down in the first round and he got up and Tillery made a face at him and then Riddick said something back. And Tillery tried to kick Riddick in the balls. And Riddick started swinging back at him and pushed Tillery to the ropes. And Newman jumped up and grabbed Tillery around the neck. It was like a professional wrestling match. And Bo uncorks a haymaker and literally tumbles Tillery over the top rope. The fight got thrown out. I think Tillery got disqualified because he was the one that initiated the brawl with a blatant kick to the groin area. They fought a rematch 2 months later, 3 months later, and Bo just annihilated him, knocked him out. Then, of course, he won the heavyweight championship of the world in one of the greatest fights in heavyweight history. I think I ranked that number 4 or number 5 when I did a ranking of the top heavyweight title fights of all time. Great fight against Evander Holyfield. And I had to miss that because my cousin was born that day, and I had to go to the hospital to see her. And she's 19 years old, and I still bust her stones about it. Of course, we had the following year, my senior year in high school, the Fan Man incident. We had fights with Galata, including the brawl at Madison Square Garden. And those were just the in-ring exploits of Riddick Bo. He had a lot of, memorable moments, some not so great outside of the ring, trying to join the Marine Corps, which didn't pan out. He had a public falling out with his wife. He was trying to kidnap her. A lot of things with Riddick Bo. And the shame of it was, if he would have just, just let things go on his talent alone, he would have been a very memorable fighter.
Also had that incident where he threw himself in the trash. Remember that?
Excuse me?
He also had that incident where he threw one of his belts in the trash.
Instead of fighting Lennox Lewis, right, it was like the WBC belt. Yeah, throw the garbage, yes, you are correct.
That was crazy. He joined the Marines for a couple weeks.
I didn't wait for that long. I think it was like a couple days of orientation, and it was like two or three days into the real basic training, he was, you know, let's forget this shit. But like I said, and the shame about it is that this is really going to tarnish his legacy a little bit. And Riddick has a chance to be a great heavyweight champion. Sometimes he, had lapses in focus, and he, battles with, his weight. He's a very, very big man. I saw Riddick back in 1992 down in Atlantic City. It was the night I went to the fight. So I was 15 years old. First fight I really went to as I was an adolescent, and it was Michael Moore and Bert Cooper, fight of the year. And Moore was heavily favored, but Cooper dropped him twice in the fight, and then Moore rallied for a knockout. I remember I'm walking through the lobby, I'm 15 years old with my dad, and I looked over, and there's Riddick Bowe, 6'5", larger than life. And he had this big smile on his face, just a gregarious guy. And somebody said, Riddick, what would have happened if that was you fighting Moore tonight? And he smiled, and he just laid his hand flat, and he goes, Moore would have been like this.
I remember watching him a lot growing up.
Yeah. I mean, he was a staple on Tuesday Night Fights, especially in the late 80s, early 90s. I mean, you put on a Tuesday Night Fight card, you were going to see Riddick Bowe every few months. And most of his fights, were entertaining. He gave the fans their money's worth. Because he was what you expected to see. He was a big guy, great jab, but he also, was not afraid to, be aggressive, especially when the time called for it. He had a killer instinct. He had a guy hurt. He was not afraid to pull the trigger and go for the knockout. And I think he would be certain. Obviously he's well past his prime. I know he was fighting sporadically a couple of years ago. But if he was, say, 22, 23 right now, he would be a big player in the heavyweight division today. I think he would beat both the Klitschko's. Totally honest. I mean, he is the guy that could match them in size. He could match Vladimir in the jab department, and he is he had the speed advantage on both. It would just come down to if he was focused, and I think for a fight like that, he would be.
All right, he only had one loss. I didn't realize that.
He had one loss. That was a rematch to Evander Holyfield. But in other parts, if Galata did not implode in both those fights, those most likely would have been losses also.
Yeah, that's the foul pole, they call it.
Yeah, the foul pole, exactly.
The last fight was in 2008, December, against Gene Pickle, who was 14-12, won by unanimous decision over in Germany. And what a career, though. Fought Galata, Holyfield, Buster Mathis Jr. when he was undefeated.
I was at that fight.
No
contest. Yeah. And you know what happened there? Mathis was a very short heavyweight, probably about 5'9", 5'10", was not a tall guy. And obviously Riddick had about 6 or 7 inches in height on him. They were fighting back and forth. Riddick looked a little rusty at first because he hadn't fought in about 9-10 months before that fight. And Mathis gave him some trouble early, a very awkward fighter as Mathis was. Finally, Bo broke through in around the fourth round, and he stung Mathis, and he knocked him down. I believe it was with an uppercut. And as Mathis was on his knee, Bo just uncorked a shot and hit him. I mean, it was almost like when Roy Jones fought Montel Griffin a few years later, when he landed that big shot when Griffin was on his knee. And Mathis just bowled right over, and they counted him out. And originally they called it a knockout for Riddick Bowe. And then, the fans started booing and, really going nuts.
because it was the wrong call. It was a foul. It was hard to say if it was a flagrant foul because, Matic had been fighting so low, so low to the ground. Yeah, you could see where there could have been a mistake that he didn't know he was on his knee. And then the fight, it ended up being turned into a no contest.
And, of course, we also got some big MMA news. And we'll go over the boxing series. We got about an hour to waste now. Shouldn't say that, but.
Okay.
We got an hour to kill, I guess. We'll call it that. And we just had the UFC Ultimate Fighter finale last Saturday. I didn't get to watch all the fights. I actually was one of the first UFC fights I didn't watch live as it happened. Because of my new setup, I don't have regular network TV at my place. Even though I usually watch it on the computer, this time I just didn't end up watching it, even though it was on free TV. But they did have quite a few interesting fights. I did see these main battles between, Mayhem Miller and Michael Bisping. And I wrote a preview article for feedcrossing.com about it and predicted the winner. Not quite the round, but basically it was I didn't even realize it was a five-round fight because they decided to do main events for certain fight cards, five rounds instead of three. But didn't make it that far because Miller obviously just kind of gassed out. He got beaten up pretty bad. He got a couple welts on his eye there. And just didn't look very good. He looked like he lost his momentum after the first round. He did all right in the first round. And he just decided he's going to go toe-to-toe with Bisping, who's a much better striker. He was just manhandled at one point. And my basic theory before that fight was there's no way that Miller has the type of big game experience that Bisping had going into that fight. He fought so many more big names. Miller fought in so many different smaller circuits. He fought a lot of different people, had a lot of different results, didn't always end the fight one way or another. He has a good amount of submissions and knockouts, but just no real big name guys that he had on his resume. So, there was actually talk about people saying he should be thrown out after one fight in the UFC. That's the other thing, too, because he was off for, I think, more than a year because of that whole incident on CBS where he started a brawl after Jake Shields' fight and came up and asked for a rematch. That was pretty ridiculous. But anyway, he lost the fight. Miller did. And Bisping now was supposedly going to get a chance to fight Anderson Silva. Now there's word that Anderson Silva is injured. So we don't know. And then there's another big news story is George St. Pierre is also injured. He was supposed to actually finally fight Nick Diaz. Now he's injured. He's tore his ACL or damaged his ACL some way. It doesn't really say in the article that I saw. But blown ACL is what they call it, I guess. So Carlos Condit will face Nick Diaz now for the interim welterweight title on February 4th in Las Vegas. And Josh Koscheck was supposed to face Condit on that card, but it doesn't appear that they've found a replacement for him yet. There's no word whether he'll still be on that card. But going back to the Ultimate Fighter finale, we had a couple interesting fights there. Dennis Bermudez and Diego Brandão, the kid I was talking about last week, who reminded me a lot of Jose Aldo. And Diego met his match in this little Dennis the Menace, they called him, Bermudez. Just a vicious first round. This came after the kid and was looking like he was going to cruise to victory. And And then they're rolling around on the ground, and little Diego gets a armbar, and it's over. Which is, you know, the rareness of mixed martial arts any given Sunday or Saturday. Stuff like that happens in a fight. And Brandao did look really good. He's probably, even though he doesn't get the official contract, he's probably going to stick around for a while, learn from his mistakes. Or actually, Bermudez, I should say. Looks pretty good. And in the other fight, John Dotson was real quick about it. In the first round, he knocked out TJ Dillashaw, his opponent there. And that was the other fight for the contract. Just a tremendous type of fight game from that kid. He's just nothing but muscle, real short guy. And he's not bashful at all. He's a little bit conceited, but I guess he's earned it. Michael Jordan used to say that. Not the one I fought, but the basketball player used to say that. It's not being conceited if you're just seeing what you can do. If you can actually do it, there's no way somebody can call you conceited. And he pulled it off. Won the fight. And obviously we also have another UFC event this weekend to talk about. We'll save that for a little bit later. But I did want to mention they've already discussed the Tough Ultimate Fighter 15 show coaches. It's going to be a while before they pick the actual fighters for the first Ultimate Fighter on Fox TV. But they've already picked the coaches. It's going to be Dominic Cruz and Uriah Faber. And they're going to get to fight each other for the 135-pound title, which is interesting because I don't think that's happened too often where the Ultimate Fighter coaches actually fight for a title rather than just fight. So we'll see how that works out. But Faber's had a few struggles in recent years. He was one of the big stars of WEC before they moved over. And I'm not sure if he's fought Cruz before, but maybe he has. Cruz has been out since his last fight against Demetrius Johnson in October, and he had hand surgery for an injury in that bout. And so he's going to be ready in March to go to battle. Yeah, they did fight once, I guess, because Cruz said that this is a dream come true to get a chance to coach Tough and beat Faber again. So, they already fought once, so this is going to be a big rematch. We'll see how much Faber's improved. See how well he does there. And a little bit of boxing news. Boxing and finance news. The former heavyweight boxing champion, Chris Bird. Remember him? Tony? Still with us?
Yeah, I'm listening. Yeah, well, I heard about Chris Bird, and I was waiting for you to say what happened.
Well, he signed on with this Citadel company, not the military college, but he's with the marketing team of Citadel EFT Incorporated. Just joined them, and it's basically a merchant services company. They provide ATM services and basically setups on websites and stuff where people want to collect credit cards for products. So he's going to be marketing that. It's one of those little stories that came across the wire this week.
You know, that's the one good thing. You know, for a lot of players, after their career is over, after their star has since faded, that they do something that shows. And you know what's really good about it? You know, for years, you know, people see like fighters, and they got stereotyped for, like, you know, a lot of years that they're not smart, that they're not this, they're not that. And a lot of fighters are truly very intelligent people. Some of them are more street smart, like Tyson, for an example, who did have a lot of problems with his, you know, personal life. But the guy, you know, he wasn't as, you know, uneducated as people came off. I mean, obviously he was not very book smart at all, but then you had other guys that were intelligent. And when you see guys that get into business ventures like this, that is a good thing. You see a guy like Charles the Hatchet Brewer, who was a former middleweight champion that I don't personally know, but he was a good friend of my former trainer. He was a computer programmer. I mean, you have the Klitschko's that hold doctorates. So this is a good thing where a guy's coming out and, you know, he's doing like a business venture. You guys like the De La Hoyas and even like the Mayweathers now that are running their own promotional companies. That all is helpful for the people associated with the sport. And part of the shame of it is that a lot that is being glorified today, and I and this is not a knock on any, it's not a knock on any type of race, it's not a knock on any type of anything that's popular. But one thing that I think is hurting a little bit with the youth of the country today, and actually the youth of the world, is you're getting a lot of what I like to deem a quote-unquote hip-hop culture, where you get, it's, you know, cooler to, you know, be a thug. It's, you know, with the pants down and the, you know, the attitude and all that, and that gets deemed as cool. And a lot of these young kids, you know, they don't want to put their focus where it needs to be. They want to, you know, do things, maybe short tops or, you know, thug style. And that's why kind of bothers me about the UFC when they do those reality shows, is they glorify the bad behavior.
Yeah, I did an article a while back called The Misconceptions of MMA. One of the sections of the pages are listing of famous MMA fighters, which are really smart people with degrees and doctorates and, you know, computer programmers, like you said. You know, it goes into the stereotype that all fighters are just brutes and don't have any intelligence at all. But it's what it is. It's talked about Anderson Silva a little while ago. Dan Henderson is now saying that Anderson Silva might keep making these injuries to avoid certain fights. So trying to make a rematch with Anderson Silva and Chael Sonnen, who had been campaigning for quite hard, trying to get the controversy going, keep the hype machine rolling for that rematch where he almost beat him in their last fight. But basically, Dan Henderson, new to the UFC, that's not scared of speaking his mind, said all the injuries that keep Anderson from a rematch with me or Chael will heal real fast if they offer Bisping to me. He wrote that on his Twitter account, so he's trying to win the Twitter bonus that out there. Some controversy. But basically, following his win over Yushin Okami in UFC 134, Silva said he had bursitis in his shoulder. And he was supposed to come back in early 2012 and go against Sonnen in a rematch, but the shoulder issues are continuing, and he's reporting that he's going to be sidelined until June next year. And the other big guy at that weight, or actually the weight above that, that they keep trying to groom to eventually fight Silva is John Jones, and he's the headliner this weekend for UFC 140. He's fighting Lyoto Machida, who is probably most famous now for retiring Randy Couture. And it's a pretty brutal knockout, too. He got a crane kick to the face. Thanks, right to a karate kick. Literally, crane kick. So Machida's more of a karate type guy. He's a very dynamic striker. Should be be a good match for Jones, but I think Jones will outclass him in the long run. See, though, you know, this is somebody who's at least you know, used to taking and giving kicks and spinning back fists and all that stuff, but it's just more of a karate style than what John Jones uses. So that's main event. We also Frank Mir versus Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira. Tito Ortiz is fighting Antonio Rogerio on the same card. Brian Ebersol versus Claude Patrick. Mark Hominick versus Chan Sung Young. Jared Hammond versus Konstantinos Filippoulos. John McDessie versus Dennis Hallman. Yves Jabloun versus Lael Watson. Igor Pokorzhak versus Krzysztof Szymanski. Mark Bocek versus Nick Lentz. Rich Gattinito versus Jake Hecht. John Cholish versus Mitch Clark. That should be the fight. That's from Air Canada Center in Toronto, Canada. Also, stories have been making the rounds. And we kind of talked about a similar situation. Although the guy we talked about the last time he had a story like this was part of a lawsuit. And he wasn't actually trained as a main fighter, but he beat up a guy that was trying to attack him. This story from the New York Daily News. There's a guy named Anthony Miranda decided he was going to rob somebody. So they haven't identified the fighter yet, but he's a UFC fighter, a very well-known guy. He's in New York. And this Miranda, 24 years old, attempted to rob and carjack the guy. The only clue they give us here in New York was he was 32 years old. And according to police, the victim, in quotes, victim, said Miranda approached his car near Kenneth Avenue, 55th Street, and asked for a light for a cigarette. When the man, who did not want to be identified, said he didn't have a light, Miranda pulled the gun, demanded valuables, and told the driver to get out of the car. And what happened next is probably what you'd expect from someone who tries to rob an MMA fighter. Instead of anything valuable, the robber came away with bruises all over his face, a bullet in his ankle after his gun discharged during the fight, and a mugshot for the ages.
Oh,
he's beat to crap. He's got two black eyes, lacerations all over his face, bruises everywhere. For his troubles, he got a trip to the hospital, and he's being held on $350,000 bail. And it's not the first time, surprisingly enough. He's on parole and has served time for multiple burglaries. He was last released from prison in March of 2010, so the last one on the street. But goes to show you know, MMA can be very useful.
Yeah.
Very good. The crap kicked out of him. So let's check the boxing schedule. Is Margarito versus Cotto this weekend, or that already happened?
No, it happened last weekend. I didn't get to write a preview on it because I've been really busy with, not just working my regular job, but, working, selling Christmas trees. I've been doing that since before Thanksgiving, getting set up and then selling since Black Friday. In fact, I'm taking vacation days for my regular job tomorrow and Monday so I can work a lot all weekend. So I'll get paid in my regular job, and I'll get paid, for selling trees. And, it's good for a little bit extra money around the holidays, and it's a lot of fun because I work with my friends. A couple years ago, I was working there, and an old LHU teammate of mine on the boxing team came there. He's like, "What the hell are you doing here?" I'm like,
selling trees. What the hell are you doing here? He goes, buying trees. I said, okay, then let's work.
So I did not get the season fight this past weekend, and unfortunately I did not get to write a preview on it. The one sentiment I had, and I had mentioned it briefly on the channel probably about 2 weeks ago, was you're dealing with two fighters that are past their prime. Cotto has two losses that were both pretty devastating. One to Margarito back in 2008, and one in Matt Pacquiao about a year or so ago. So, you're dealing with a fighter that has taken a couple pretty significant beatings out there. But with Margarito, I think Margarito took a worse beating against Pacquiao. He's an older fighter. His reputation is a bit sully from the hand wraps. He took the beating from Shane Mosley, and he's never been the same. And basically, what I was saying about this fight was all that Margarito really has left is the fact that he's a big physical guy and he has a good chin. So the only way he'd be winning fights now is if he just absorbs a beating and the guy can't punch him no more. Almost like that episode of The Simpsons where Homer was winning boxing matches by letting his opponents exhaust themselves by teeing off on his head. Well, Cotto did tee off on his head and cut him up pretty bad, damaged his face, similar to what Pacquiao had done, and they finally stopped in the 10th round and awarded Cotto the 10th round TKO.
Also on the card, Philly's own Mike Jones won the number one contenders match in every round, and he is now primed for a title shot with Randall Bailey for the IBF welterweight title.
Wow, I just discovered the mismatch of the week. What a name this guy has. Sort of featherweight, 12 rounders. I mean, that too in Thailand.
Can you turn it up? I'm having a hard time hearing you again.
He's in the mismatch of the week here in Thailand. His name is Turdsack Kokiet Jim.
Oh my God. Turdsack, really?
Yes.
T-E-R-D. I love that name.
T-E-R-D-S-A-K. There's not much other ways you could pronounce that. And his record is 45-3-1 with 30 knockouts. And he's fighting a guy named John Pinter, who's 3-11. He's got only two wins by knockout and one draw. And it's a 12-rounder. The guy's only had 15 total fights, 11 of them losses. And it's for a title, Interim WBC Asian Boxing Council Super Featherweight title. That's a pretty funny matchup. Also, last week we had the Abner Mares fight there. But was that?
Yeah.
That was the week before, I think, right?
No, that was something.
All right. And I was kind of surprised. I didn't mention this earlier, but I meant to email you about it. But, they did the predictions. They sent out an email and everything like that.
I didn't get a chance to incorporate when I had a
chance to. I was going to say, that's like free publicity for us.
I know, man. I saw all the people.
You don't only have to write like a sentence, buddy. Come on. No excuse. But we also have another fight on Friday. A whole fight card. It's pretty interesting here. From it's going to be on Telemundo from Kissimmee, Florida. 12 round light flyweights. Alex Sanchez, 31-7-1, versus Glenn Donaire, 17-4-1, 9 knockouts for the interim WBC Latino flyweight title. And not too much other fights jumping out on that card. But, a fight from Kabbalah, Azerbaijan on Saturday. Light welterweights, Azad Azizov, who's 25-3-1, 15 knockouts, fighting Michelle DeRocco, 31-1-1, 13 knockouts. And they're fighting for the vacant International Boxing Organization Intercontinental Light Welterweight title. That's a tough one. Pryor Jr. is fighting in Montreal, also on Saturday. It's a 12-round super middleweight fight between Adonis Stevenson, 15-1 with 12 knockouts, and Aaron Pryor Jr., who's 16-4 with 11 knockouts. That's actually the main event. They're fighting for the NABA super middleweight title and the vacant WBO NABO super middleweight title. And also the WBC International middleweight title is on the line in the co-main event between David Lemieux, who's 25-1 with 24 knockouts, and Joaquin Alcine, who's 32-2, 19 knockouts and one draw. That's a pretty good card all around.
Oh, Rich, I got to take this one.
What?
Last September, my boss at work got fired. So, for the past 3 months, we've been without a manager. The regional manager's been coming in, trying to help out a little bit. But we've been basically like a rudderless ship the last few months. And then it's been speculation like, oh, he's going to be a new manager. Is it going to be one of our, technician managers, who's going to run the brand, this and that. So finally it gets announced, okay, we've got a new guy, he's coming in. He's coming in on Wednesday for kind of like a meet and greet. Okay, I'm cool with that. I'm going to meet somebody and probably annoy them. I'm sure they'll love me and my sunshiny attitude. So I'm standing, I'm kind of like in a little lobby area, having lunch when I see the regional manager pull up and I see this other guy get out of the car. It's like, okay, man, here we go. And I purposely wore my Team Tornado boxing jacket in there. You know, you kind of let this guy know that I'm the Tornado, and that's spelled T-O-R-N-A-D-O. And, you know, if he messes around, he's going to get beat down. So as soon as they walk in, they see me, they say I'm in the lobby area. The regional manager's like, hey, this is Tony. He goes, he's the guy I was telling you about. I'm sitting there thinking, why is this guy telling this new boss a lot about me? And first thing he says is, into the boxing game, and this guy, his eyes light up. He's like, really? He goes, my family and I are like the biggest fight fans out there. We watch all the pay-per-views. The next thing you know, he doesn't even make it into the other people. He's like, So what'd you think of did you see the Margarito Cotto fight? What'd you think about that one? What about Joe Frazier dying? He said, who was your favorite fighter? He goes, I used to love Sugar Ray Leonard. So this guy's like, I'm like, yeah, it's awesome. You know, next thing I know, I start coming out. I'm like, my promotional side starts coming out. I'm talking about the website. I'm talking about the writing I do. And the regional manager, actually, every time I write an article, he asks me for a copy of it. And he said, like, some of my previews are the best that he's ever read. So I'm like, yeah, I'm getting compliments, right? And I'm fired up. But it was just a new manager got me, called me in the copy room today, and he's asking me about Roberto Duran and Mike Tyson. He's asking me Livingstone Bramble, Boom Boom Mancini. I'm going off, I'm like, shit. I'm like, well, they can give all the work to somebody else. I said, my job there should be just the boxing aficionado. I got to tell him my nickname, the Rain Man of Boxing.
We're
trying to, talk about some topics so we can get Riddick on the phone. We spoke before we got on here tonight about the email you sent me yesterday. And I just wanted to talk about that a little bit. It's a fight topic. The gentleman in question, his name is Frank Stoltz. And I've mentioned him several times on the air, probably the toughest fight that I had. On a level of toughness, he ranked up there with Brian Kerr from Reno. Just an absolutely solid, tough guy. Frank Stoltz is from Penn State. He and I engaged in just a bloodbath of a war in 1996 at Mansfield University. That was so damn exciting that the coach from Mansfield thanked me for making his boxing card set. And so Frank emails me after 15 years I haven't talked to him. I haven't seen him in 15 years. He happened to find our fight on YouTube. You may think I had other fights of his, which unfortunately I do not. I know the fight he is looking for, and I did fight on that card. I had a decision win for a kid from Penn State, but that card, there was 18 fights on it. So the fights that, we were videoing, we were only videoing, Lock Haven fights, because we had like 8 Haven fighters on the card. So we had Haven fights that we taped that day, and we didn't get his fight with the Mansfield kids. The fight in Mansfield obviously was taped because he and I, fought each other. And I still mention that as probably one of the toughest fights I've ever had, just because I hit this guy with freaking nuclear bombs. And I would knock him down, he'd get the hell back up, and he'd be coming right back at me. I'm like, you got to be hitting me. And it was funny, that fight, there was the one captain from the Penn State boxing team, he was not supposed to fight on this card, but he went up, he was going to help in the corners. So when he gets up there, one of the kids from Lock Haven did not make weight. So they said to him, they're like, Vince, jump on the scale, because the kid Vince was a natural weight class below. So they said, Vince, jump on the scale if you want to fight tonight. And he was like, yeah, I'll fight. Well, Vince brought all of his equipment except for his shoes. He had his, they had gauze. He had his mouthpiece. He had all that. Did not have his shoes. So he's like, well, shit, what am I going to do? And the only other guy with a size 10 and a half on the card was me. So after my fight was over, I was getting out of the ring and starting to untie my shoes so Vince could wear them in the main event. Which, like I said, was pretty cool. So when it was over, my fight was over, and I'm going to Vince to, take my shoes off so he can use them. He looks down and he goes, who the hell is this blood all over your shoes? I'm like, well, it's one of the two of us. We were both, Frank was spouting out his nose, I was spouting out my mouth. It was awful. Vince is like, I gotta wear these bloody freaking shoes. I'm like, yeah, you do. But it was good to hear from Frank. I'm going to email him back tonight and, talk about the old days. And,
show sometime.
Why not? I think he actually lived only like 20 minutes from me. But I have not seen him since 1996. And a few years later, I'm at a nightclub down close to where I live here. And there was the girl, like one of the cocktail waitresses, the cute girls with the short skirts that sell these weak-ass $1 drinks that, they get guys to out of her chest and pay for them. So this one girl comes up to me. I had talked to her a couple times before, a real pretty girl. And she noticed my earring, my boxing glove earring. She goes, you box? I said, yeah. I said, I box for my hair. She goes, oh, my God, that's so cool. A friend of mine used to box. I said, really? She said, yeah, he used to box for Penn State University. I said, no shit. So what's his name? She said, you probably don't know him. I said, what's his name? His name is Frank Stoltz. I said, oh, yeah, I know him. You know Frank? I said, I fought Frank. I said, we beat the living shit out of each other. So, we were laughing about it and joking around. Now, a little bit later, this girl's husband, now, she looked way too young to be married, but I think she was in her early 20s. Husband comes over, and he's just a drunk, obnoxious moron. He's like, slow all over himself. And she's sober because she's working. So she goes, hey, this is Tony. He knows Frank. They
fought in the amateurs, like 5 years ago or whatever it was. Fuck Frank, he's an asshole. I'll beat his ass, I don't like him. So they, yeah, him and Frank really don't get along. So he started running his mouth. And I had a buzz on, but I was nowhere as near as drunk, as slobbering as this guy was. And he's like getting like all mouthy, and not towards me, but I mean, I was taking offense to it. I'm like, you beat his ass. I'm like, do you box or are you a martial artist? No, man, I'm a street fighter, and I beat his ass. I'm like, no, you wouldn't. What? I said, no, you wouldn't. I said, I fought Frank. I said, I hit that guy with everything I got. I could not come out. I said, he got up from everything else. And I said, he was a tough motherfucker. I said, he would kill you, dude. I'll tell you right there, honestly, unless I'm squirting in the guy's face, and if he wanted a little issue with me, I would have slapped him around too. But I'm like, Frank would kill you. Yeah, I said, I'll tell you something right now, dude. And I was training a kid at the time. I was about 17 years old, was about 6'2" and about, 195 pounds. And he was ripped pretty good. And he had short, blonde, kind of spiky hair. So I used to call him Ivan Drago. And I said, I'll tell you right now, dude, I got a 17-year-old kid in the gym that would probably knock you out in 30 seconds. I said, because street fighting ain't shit. I said, that ain't shit. I said, I have a 17-year-old kid that would knock you the fuck out. And the guy didn't know what to say to me. And then his wife came over later and apologized. Like, yeah, he's drunk. And him and Frank, had an issue in the past. I'm like, yeah, I'm like, her name is Trish. I'm like, Trish, that's cool, I'm not offended. I could tell the guy was kind of way out of his mind and was kind of an idiot. But just that, idiot attitude. This kid Frank would have tore his ass apart. And I have a lot of respect for Frank. I mean, like I said, he fought me tooth and nail. And we went down to the wire. And said, he hit me with shots. So when it was over, I went out to the lobby of Mansfield, Athletic Center to get a drink out of the machine. And my dad was walking out with me. There was a pretty cute girl out there, a little softball player or whatever. And she was selling T-shirts, or whatever. And, she said something to me like, oh, hey, you want to buy a T-shirt? I'm like, hey, how you doing? And I was like, oh, no thanks, blah, blah, blah. And I go back. That's kind of cute, man. She was like talking to me. She was like, looking at me. I'm like, Dad, I'm seeing two of her right now. She has four boobs. She had four boobs, Bob. Four boobs and two bucks.
I said, oh, no. Get back to the boxing schedule. I got to get to the best fights of the weekend on HBO. And I got a little bit of insight on this one. Amir Khan versus Lamont Peterson. For the Super World Light Welterweight title and the IBF Light Welterweight title. And I actually saw the Eliminator fight for this battle here. Lamont Peterson fought in Vegas while I was there. He's got a record of 29-1 with 15 knockouts, one draw. And he beat Victor Manuel Tayo in that fight. In the 12th round, and it was kind of a weird knockout because, obviously the guy could hear the count. He's standing there on one knee. He only had like 14 seconds left before the end of the fight, and he was looking right in the ref's eyes, and then the ref got to 10, and he stood up, and the fight was over.
Let's see what happened that one.
And it was a close fight, I don't think Kyle would have won it, but, couldn't have been too hard to stand up before the fight was over and finish it out with a decision, but he got the knockout instead. And that was over at the Cosmopolitan there in Las Vegas, one of their three fight nights that I went to, I think, by the end of the time I was there. It's an all-around fight. The only loss that Peterson has is to Timothy Bradley. He lost to him 2 years ago in December, on the 12th, back in 2009. Bradley was 24-0 at the time, and Peterson was just coming off a win against another undefeated fighter, Willie Blaine, who was 20-0. In he had a TKO in the seventh round in that fight in April of 2009. But Tamir Khan's going to be a tough customer. Go ahead.
I think you got to go with Khan in that fight. You know, we have comparable speed here. Khan might even be a little bit quicker. He's got the punching power over Peterson. I would give Peterson the edge in the chin, because Khan has shown that he is not, you know, will never be confused with the Jake LaMottas and George Chavalas and Ray Mercers in the world when it comes to the chin department. But for pure skill-wise, Khan is getting better. He's a harder puncher, two-handed. He's a little bit bigger. So Peterson will give him a good fight. I think he might even, stun him a few times. But the overall body of work, the overall quality body of work will be performed by Amir Khan. So I'm looking at a decision here. It'll be close. It'll be something along the lines of maybe like 116 to 112. Peterson will make it very competitive. I just think that Khan is still a little bit bigger, a little bit better.
He's fought a lot more legends, too, in his career. Big name guys. Just got off a fight with Zab Judah. He won by knockout on the 5th of July. So it's definitely Khan's fight to win. But I don't know. I mean, the way that Peterson fought didn't impress me that much. But, you know, certain styles change, you know, for certain fighters. So maybe that was just his game plan going in. He was kind of just kind of plodding around the ring, trading shots certain times, but not really being the aggressor for the most part. He's a very intuitive counterpuncher, though, so if he fights the right fight, you know, he could end up with a decision, but it's very unlikely. And the fight's going to be in Washington, D.C., so there shouldn't be any favoritism one way or the other, even though Peterson's kind of close to that area. But his brother's also fighting on the card, Anthony Peterson, who also only has one loss. He's fighting at lightweight. He's 30-1 with 20 knockouts, fighting Daniel Atta, who's 26-8 with 9 knockouts, 1 draw. And we also have a 10-round heavyweight fight between undefeated Seth Mitchell, 23-0 with 1 draw, 17 knockouts, fighting Timur Abragimov, who is 30 wins, 3 losses, and 1 draw. And that's he's also got 16 knockouts. So that's going to be the co-main event, I guess. And another fight worth mentioning, which makes probably this card probably the best card of the week here. We have an 8-round middleweight fight between Fernando Guerrero, 21-1, 16 knockouts, fighting Robert Clewer, who's 11-13, with 2 draws and 5 knockouts. And of course, last week's guest is fighting this week, Roy Jones Jr., fighting in Atlanta, Georgia. And I think this is another card. I'm not exactly sure, but it looks like this is another card where two brothers are fighting on the same card. We have not only Max Alexander, but Stefan Alexander also on this card. It could be related, it might not be, but obviously Roy Jones Jr. is the main event. He's fighting a 10-round cruiserweight battle here. His record is 54-8 with 40 knockouts, fighting Max Alexander, who's 14-5-2 and only has 2 knockouts. He looks like he's only won 1 out of his last 6 fights, so he's had a tough stretch. But the co-main event here is lightweights, Chris Howard, 13-0-1 with 6 knockouts, fighting Stefan Alexander, who's 4-3 with 4 knockouts. And another interesting fight here. We get cruiserweights, 8-rounder, Ryan Coyne, 18-0 with 7 knockouts, fighting Dante Craig, who's 18-11 with 1 draw and 13 knockouts. There is one more fight worth mentioning on Sunday from the Philippines. And it's for the WBO flyweight title. And it's a guy that actually I wrote my very first boxing article about back when they had boxing on Versus. Brian Hawaiian Punch Valoria.
Yeah, I remember
him in the 2000. Yeah. He's flyweight now. He's 29-3, 16 knockouts, fighting Giovanni Segura, who's 28-1-1 with 24 knockouts. And it's for the WBO title. And also on that card is a 12-round super featherweight fight between Martin Honorio, 31-6, 16 knockouts, 1 draw, fighting Fasai Sakharibin, who's 36-2, 20 knockouts. So those should be definitely some good fights there. Probably not too many knockouts with the lightweights, you know, but you never know. And you also have one more fight for a title, the IBF Pan Pacific lightweight title, between Al Salbapan, who's 17-0-1, 12 knockouts, and Jonel Gadapan, who's 7-2, with 5 knockouts. So that about does it for the boxing matchups coming up this weekend. Till next week. But we do have some more MMA fights in addition to the UFC 140 card. We got tomorrow night, we have a bunch of fights going on all around the country. Titan Fighting Championship 21 from Kansas City, Kansas. MMA Power Tour from Costa Rica. Falsaroli versus Honstein in Sydney, South Wales, Australia. For CFC 19. Fatality Arena 4, Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. That's kind of a weird name for a fight. Fatality Arena. Jeez. We got Zavarov versus Enomoto in the M1 Challenge 30 from Costa Mesa, California. And a couple more on Friday. Red Deer, whatever that is, means. PFC 8 is the fight club, and the event's called Red Deer. Oh, because it's from Red Deer, Alberta, Canada. That's where they're having it. And then we also have Cage Fury 3, Rise of the Modern Day Gladiator. That's on Friday night from Sheridan, Colorado. And on the 10th, we got King of the Cage from Las Vegas, Nevada, the Eastside Cannery Casino and Hotel. As I said, UFC 140, Jones versus Machida from Canada. We also have Manua versus Rhea from Nottingham, England, Bama 8. That's Cage Fury Fighting Championship 12 from Atlantic City, New Jersey. Future King Tournament 2011 from Tokyo, Saturday. Usually they have those on Sunday, but it's new. Real Fight 8 from Sao Paulo, Brazil. Impact MMA Recognition from Pleasanton, California. Battle in the South Championship Amateur MMA from Jacksonville, North Carolina. At Hooligan's Pub in Music Hall. Master Fighters Championship 6 from Santiago, Chile. Grand Prix Global Semifinal from Oblast, Russia. And one more on Saturday, Evolution 2 from Clovis, New Mexico. And we got about 15 minutes before Rick Bowe comes on. So, I don't know. Don't really have much lined up. Do you have any ideas there? What can we discuss?
Let me say. You know what kind of sucks? Back in the day, a couple years ago, we used to have audio clips. not the audio person, sorry, when we like when we had the webcam. We could have something cool like post my show my fight with Frank Stoltz.
Yeah, we could
we listened to the audio with all of my father yelling, telling me to stop playing my left hook so goddamn much.
Yeah, with the price I'm paying for hosting this show every month, we ought to have video capability.
Yeah.
What can you
do? What are they hitting you with on that?
$40 a month, $39. And we just lost the podcast page, fnu.mypodcast.com. It's gone. And unfortunately, I didn't categorize everything and put it on a zip drive like I was planning to do. I saved it for the last minute, of course. And in the last minute, they had already shut the site down. But I do have all the files. I just had to go through them all, listen to them, and figure out what they are, and then categorize them.
If there wasn't the last minute, nothing would ever get done.
Right.
I believe that.
That's for sure. Now, I do have a couple articles here. We already talked about MMA versus boxing paydays. Dana White was blabbing about last week. I don't think so. I did get an email today. I don't know when it's going to happen, but Full Contact Fighter, FCFighter.com, wants to do an interview with me about the whole Zion situation. And I haven't quite nailed it down yet, but there is a little bit of news in that front. There's actually some reports that they're going to sell the company now, not to an outside entity, but they're going to sell it from Fertitta Enterprises to Zuffa, which would make it official that the fight company owns its own sponsor if they go forward with it. I think they're going to do an audit, and then it's going to happen. That's what I've been hearing. So that'll be interesting if that happens, but I don't think if it does, if they're going to promote it. I don't think they want a lot of people knowing it. And as it is, actually, there's a lot of people out there that have no clue that the Fertittas own that company. I saw an article a couple weeks ago. Somebody wrote, and somebody had asked in the comments, "Well, who owns it?" And of course, somebody had written, "Oh, this company Manzin owns it, which is just a front company for Fertitta Enterprises." So that's what they're operating it under still to this day after they've gotten out of bankruptcy. So that was kind of interesting. UFC champ Junior Dos Santos is contemplating an Olympic run. It's an interesting story. He won his first UFC title by knocking out Cain Velasquez earlier this month. UFC on Fox One, they called it. One fight. Wasn't really one card like it should have been. But Dos Santos said he might try to qualify for the Olympics in 2016, which are scheduled for Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. And he says, "My trainings begin and end with boxing. There are dynamics and strategies I'm already used to, but I'll test myself. It's inevitable. Who knows? I get an Olympic medal. Everything's possible." So he's going to go in boxing. Olympic boxing.
And that's wrong with anything. That's a good ambition to have. But I got a, if I was debating him right now, here's a couple things that I would come out and say. Number one, Olympic boxing is not easy. It's not easy just to go out there. Wasn't the Olympic gold medalist in boxing? An easy goal, especially if you don't have a traditional boxing background, which obviously I don't know the guy's career, as highly as I would with, people in the boxing field whose careers I would know. The other thing is, Olympic boxing does not get the publicity that it did 15, 20 years ago, and especially 30, 40 years ago when it was a big deal. I mean, now it's like the scoring is so atrocious that, I mean, and fights are so, uneventful, to be completely honest, because of the scoring. The scoring is that, favors, like, the peck system, the run peck. So you're not getting a lot of exciting fights. And so now they end up getting broadcast at, like, 3 o'clock in the morning on, like, ESPN 12. Or NBC 12 or whatever it's shown on. So you're not, going to get that mainstream publicity. Rich, can you tell me the last U.S. fighter to win a gold medal in boxing?
No. I can't.
It was not in 2008. In 2008, they only had 2 bronze medalists. It was in 2004 and in Andre Ward.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Would you like to take a guess at the last one to win it before him?
Oscar De La Hoya?
Nope. David Reed, 1996, out of Philadelphia. And David parlayed that into a nice career, a nice contract, I should say, because, he won it with a stunning third-round knockout over the heavily favored Cuban, who was way ahead on the cards. Reed lands a shot, knocks him out, and he becomes the American Dream. Before that was Oscar De La Hoya, who was the Golden Boy. Now, tell me this. I'm going to give you a couple fighters from the 1996 Olympics, which was the second Olympics to use that atrocious scoring. De La Hoya's Olympics in 92 was the first. Okay. Who had better careers from the 1996 Olympic team? David Reed, the gold medalist? Floyd Mayweather, a bronze medalist, or Antonio Tarver, a bronze medalist?
Floyd Mayweather.
Who made the most money? Rank them. Out of the three of them, rank them. 1, 2, 3. Who's made the most money?
Well, Floyd's got to be number one.
And Tarver's number two. This is after Reed signed a $14 million contract to start his career.
Man, that's crazy.
Yeah. And the thing is, Reed suffered an injury during his amateur career, actually going in the Olympic trials, which caused his left eye to droop. And they always said, and his people always said, no, it's not going to be a hindrance, you can see fine. But you could tell during his career, he was going to hit with a lot of right hands. And then the fight against Felix Trinidad back in 2000 pretty much ruined him. And then after that, I mean, he had a couple fights after that, but you could tell he was pretty much washed up. Where guys like Tarver and Mayweather are still going strong. They didn't have that gold medal. How about this? I'll give you another gold medalist from the 96 Olympics. He was the guy who beat Antonio Tarver, in the medal rounds in a very close decision. Vasily Girov, who ended up winning the cruiserweight title. Who's made more money as a pro, Girov or Tarver?
Tarver.
Exactly. So the gold medal really doesn't mean as much anymore as it did. I mean, back in the day, there were some gold medals that flamed out, didn't have, great professional careers. Howard Davis comes to mind. Mark Breland had a decent career, but he was so much more was expected out of him. Same thing with Tyrell Biggs, both from the great 84 team. And the thing with the guys, I mean, it was just a launching pad for them. A lot of people remember Sugar Ray Leonard as the kid going up against the invincible Andres, whatever his name was, and Leonard, this kid who was fighting his feet, was so scared getting into that fight that he taped the picture of his girlfriend inside of his sock on his calf because he didn't want to go into the ring alone. And there he gets in the ring, and he just ends up beating the living shit out of this guy. I mean, he just ripped him apart like he was sick. And he probably got into
the last guy that I remember that really marketed the gold medal and did well with Oscar, Oscar De La Hoya, you know.
Oh, absolutely. The Golden Boy.
Yeah.
I don't think he was called the Golden Boy until he won that gold medal. And then David Reed wasn't called the American Dream until he won the gold medal. Because basically, David Reed was the American Dream. With one punch, he went from being a silver medalist and would have signed a decent contract and maybe had a decent pro career. Like I said, his career ended early because he was having trouble with his vision, and then Felix Trinidad's beating took a lot out of him. Reed would have had a decent career, probably would have won a world title, and you know, would have made some decent money, but not as much as he did with that one punch. That one punch turned him into the American Dream.
Right. Yeah, Dos Santos going into boxing is probably not going to...
Yeah, I don't think it's a good move, because Olympic boxing, the scoring is so difficult now, and the publicity is not there. I'm a hardcore fight fan. I can't tell you the last time I watched an Olympic boxing match.
Right.
It's probably... 2004.
Well, this is going to be, if it happens, it's going to be in 2016, so we'll have to wait a while, but it's supposed to be in Rio de Janeiro, so it'll be in his hometown, basically, and he does have the experience, obviously, of being a pro fighter, which nobody in the Olympics is going to have other than him, unless somebody else comes from MMA.
Now here's another question. I know in obviously sports like basketball, they have their dream teams, and they get the professional basketball players, play for the U.S. team and all that. But I know in boxing, they never allow the pros.
They're talking about it, though. I know I've read articles that says they're talking about doing that in the future. I just don't know when. And with the women, actually, the women are making way more news lately because the whole issue with skirts. Did you hear this? They're trying to have the women wear skirts so they can tell from the men or something. I don't know what their reasoning is, but there's been a lot of debate. I get, the boxing links every day in Google. And apparently the Olympics are in London next. And the British are just up in arms, back and forth, arguing over whether it's appropriate to have women boxers wearing skirts instead of trunks. And I've been meaning to bring it up the last few weeks, but I always keep forgetting it. So I guess now's a good time.
No.
I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's that big of a deal. But a lot of women's rights groups might disagree. But the thing is...
Rich.
Yeah.
I got my new Ring magazine yesterday, and they have a section in there on some top prospects, and it's talking about, on the cusp, 10 fighters poised to make major breakthroughs in 2012. And the first one on there is the guy from your neck of the woods, who we interviewed just about a month or two ago, Edwin Rodriguez.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a tough fight his last fight. I really thought it was closer than they made it out to be. The punch stat numbers showed a completely different story, though. We talked about that, but it seemed like the guy he was fighting had a lot of good shots. He got in there and really tested him. But like I said before the fight, the difference was the big time opponents that each of those guys faced. Because I forget who he fought, but the guy he fought just didn't. Yeah, I think they were both undefeated going in, if I remember correctly.
Rodriguez is part of the higher quality going into that fight. And sometimes, that can be really important. If you have two guys that got undefeated records, but one guy is a class above, even if he has less experience, talent can win out. But sometimes if you're going out there and you got two guys that maybe you're evenly matched, but one guy's had, you know, some fights in his career where he fought different calibers of fighters or guys with different styles, he's able to make adaptions in that ring for a guy that maybe has not fought a high quality, will suffer from that. And the biggest example I can always think about is Tommy Morrison versus Ray Mercer. Both had undefeated records, but Mercer had some really tough fights with guys like Bert Cooper, Francisco Damiani. He had that good amateur background. Morrison, who was a harder knockout puncher, Mercer was more of a clubbing type fighter. He would, kind of beat you down and wear you down. Morrison was a guy that could take you out with one punch. He was faster. He was younger. So, and talent-wise, pure talent, Morrison was probably better. But when the fight started getting tough, Mercer was able to draw on his, tougher competition and tougher experiences. And Morrison was, obviously faded.
Right. Well, actually, I had communicated with Tommy on Facebook, and it was like months went by before I got a response, and I remember we had talked about how he got arrested, and they showed his mugshot. I sent you a picture of his
mugshot. He looked bad.
Yeah, he looked really bad, but apparently he still wants publicity. Tommy Morrison, with all his troubles, he probably would still be a good guest. But I failed him. He sent me an email.
I used to love Tommy Morrison growing up, because I started following him first, because he was being on ESPN. Bill Caton was pushing him from the start, so he's fighting four rounds on there. And then they're always pushing it, the nephew of John Wayne, my dad, was a big John Wayne movie fan, so he was kind of getting me to watch him. And then, of course, Rocky Five.
Yeah, you can't forget that. It's probably what he's most known for. Kind of like Butterbean getting pissed that he's most known for Jackass.
Yeah.
That's his claim to fame. Tommy Gunn.
It's a shame to see people that, you know, have a lot going for them. And obviously, Tommy's made a lot of money in his career. And I don't know how he's doing financially now. I can't imagine he's doing well financially. You know, what years with, you know, prison stints and arrest problems and things like that. I can see him suffering financially. And that's a shame because, you know, as a young guy, I'll tell you, when he first got diagnosed with HIV in 1996, I was a sophomore in college and watched, you know, Tommy for the past, you know, maybe 8 years going into that. And I remember my coach, Dr. Cox, was in Philadelphia when they were filming Lost 5, and I guess he was down there the one day. And I forget the whole story on why he was there and how he, you know, was wired or why he was seeing Tommy or talking to him. But he said, like, he was leaving with five girls, you know, and they were headed to a hotel. Well, it doesn't make a rocket science to figure. It's rocket science to figure out what was going to be going on in that hotel. And when you're, you know, especially back in the 80s and the early 90s, when, you know, safe or sex methods were not being practiced as much, yeah, you're running into situations where, you know, celebrities, the guys like Magic Johnson and all that, were running out with a lot of, you know, random girls picking them up wherever they can find them. And, you know, especially drugs and needles are being swapped, you got two ways that you're potentially contracting the virus.
Yep, not good, but apparently, you know, he was able to get a fight after the fact. And supposedly he's one of those miracles where he doesn't have any of it in his system anymore. So he says, but hasn't been sick, so maybe it's true. Anyway, let's give Riddick Bowe's manager here a little call. See if we can get somebody on the phone. Tell us about Riddick.
Hi, you reached 410-330-503. Please leave a message at the tone, and I'll call you back. Thanks for calling. Have a great day.
At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Gernica, this is Rich Bergeron from Fight News Unlimited. We're trying to do the radio show this week here. We're supposed to have Riddick on. He's supposed to call in at 9:15. It's about 9:22 right now. And we're just wondering what's going on. Again, our call-in number for guests is 347-324-3228. I had sent you an email. We were pretty sure everything was good to go, but I guess we haven't heard from him yet, so just wondering what's going on. You can send me an email or just have him call that number within the next 10 minutes, and we'll be good to go. All right. So it's worth a shot. We'll see.
Always worth a shot.
I had a feeling this was going to happen. I probably should have sent a reminder earlier today. This is why I typically tell guests that we would rather call out to them than have them call in.
Yeah, right.
And I usually use the excuse that the audio is better when we call out. But that's only happened once when we had that. We had one guest, a female fighter there. I forget her name now, but the boxing empress there set us up with her. She was really hard to hear. We had like three other people on the line that time. So that might
Melissa
Yes, Melissa St. Beale.
Yeah, Rain Man remembers me.
There you go.
Yeah, she set that one up for us.
All right.
Now, remember that, because I covered Melissa's pro debut.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So, I was
working on
that. Not talking about
it. Oh, breaking up. You're breaking up.
Who's breaking up?
Yep. Can I ask my Henry? Now we can, because you're still a little foggy.
Okay, fine. I was at work, I'm not talking about money or benefits from your business. I was talking about the future of the blue horizon.
Yeah. What is the future of the
blue horizon? Which unfortunately is, but
there is no. What's the matter? You can't drum up the funds to buy the place?
Oh, I wish I could. You can loan me some money, I would. If you win this case, I think we could buy it and make a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah, if I win my $150 million motion, I might be able to do something about that. Actually, I got to...
We would be legends.
Yeah. One day, it's possible. I mean, I still get people all the time thinking that we are a fight club, you know, trying to get me to sign them as fighters. They contact us through the website. I have to tell them, hey, you know, we don't have our own fight league here. It's funny, too. Somebody just sent me an email the other day asking, you know, how do they get into MMA and how much does it cost to go to a gym? I'm like, come on. You know, that's what the gym is for. You call them up. You know, you find it in the phone book.
Yeah.
You call them up. You do a Google search. You know, how am I supposed to tell you what your gym costs?
Well, it's because you're omnipotent. You know all this stuff.
Yeah, so.
You know, I used to, I mean, it's hard now because I'm working so much, but during the time that I was unemployed a couple of years ago, I was spending a lot of time on Yahoo Answers on the boxing forum, and I would use it to promote us. Anytime I'd answer a question, I'd always put a link to our website on there, and I'd always kind of write something like, I'd put my name in there. I'd always have the way of the title would be Boxer Trainer. Reporter and web and radio show personality, because I have a personality. People would ask me on the phone, and people used to email me just for advice, and I was always happy to share it. People would say, "Hey, you know, I'm a 15-year-old kid from Houston, Texas. How can I get into boxing?" And my answer was generally a standard one for people who live in an area where I'm not familiar with. Example of Houston, Texas. And I would say, you know, go on Google, you know, look for boxing gyms, you know, make sure that, you know, the gym what you want. You know, if you don't, make sure if you want to do real competitive boxing, you're not going to do like a cardio boxer size gym that Dana White would be running. You want to go to a legitimate boxing gym. I said, you know, look at places that, you know, have good reputations and look for a trainer that has a good reputation that is, you know, known for training quality people. I mean, anybody can throw put a water bottle in their hand, throw a towel over the shoulder and say, I'm a boxing trainer. But you got to look at people that have quality reputations in training people. They go to them, and I said, you know, you got to know what you want when you start. I mean, you got to have an expectation. Am I going to try and improve my speed? Am I going to get in shape? Am I doing it for fun? And that way they can tailor your training to that. I mean, you go to a place, and, you know, you eventually, you know, you don't want to compete at all. You just want to get in shape. We had guys who used to come down to my rec center. I remember one kid in particular. He was a heavy set kid. I'll say he was maybe 17 years old. I was about 21, 22. He was about 16, 17 years old. He was a very, very heavy set. And he just wanted to lose some weight and get some confidence in himself. He couldn't play basketball with the other teenagers. You know, he was out of shape. And you could tell the kid did not have a lot of confidence. So, I mean, the trainers aren't going to go in there and teach them how to jab and how to step and spend a lot of time on technique with them. Here we go. He's never going to compete. They're going to teach him the basics, and then they're going to put him on a heavy bag, and they're going to maybe, if it's slow, get him in the ring and let him move around a little bit and hit the mitts and skip rope and, you know, do stuff, you know, to help his cardiovascular.
All right, hold that thought. Yeah, we have Riddick.
Oh,
hello.
Let me...
Hello, can you hear us?
Yes, we are here.
Oh, all right. Hey.
Yeah, I am.
Yep, we're live. Riddick, can you hear us?
Yes, sir.
All right. So, can you give us an idea of what you got going on these days? What are you promoting? What are you out there doing?
Well, as you know, I've been training, and I decided to make a comeback, so I'm in the process of giving myself a weight.
Oh. All right. You know, we actually had your biographer on a couple times, John Greenberg. You remember him?
What is his name?
John Greenberg wrote a book about you.
Yeah, did he?
Yeah, you don't remember?
No, what did the book say? Can you recall?
No, just we had him on as a guest on a past show.
Yeah, well, you know how it is. You know, a lot of people say they did this, they did that. So I gotta see the work before I can say, you know, he did whatever he said he did.
What's your plan for your comeback? Is there a date that you're trying to plan for? Or?
Well, I'm hoping sometime in early February we'll have the first fight, and I'm feeling good. I'm looking forward to this, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys that have proven that they can fight well into their 40s, so I wouldn't rule it out for anybody, especially somebody with your record.
Yeah, first time with George Foreman. George Foreman came back at 45. Rather than he surprised everybody, so I definitely can do it.
Yeah.
And I will.
Yeah, I'll never forget the night he knocked out Michael Moore there. It's pretty intense.
Yeah, I remember Michael Moore.
Riddick. Yeah. Speaking of Michael Moore, the only time I ever got to meet you in person, and I'm going back to 1992. It was a couple months before you all won the title from Holyfield. And it was down in Atlantic City at the Trump Taj Mahal. I was a 15-year-old kid. I hadn't started training yet, but I did eventually start boxing 2 years later myself. But my dad took me down to the Michael Moore versus Burt Cooper fight. And you had knocked out Cooper about a year and a half earlier, second-round knockout on the Holyfield Douglas undercard. And Moore went life and death with him and knocked him down. And I remember I was standing in the lobby and you were standing there, and I'm like, wow, that's Riddick Bowe. And, you know, obviously you're a big guy. And I remember a guy coming up to you saying, Riddick, what would have happened if you were in the ring with Moore tonight? And you laid your hands out flat and you said that would have been Michael Moore. And they said that was only about 5 months before you won the title from Holyfield.
In my opinion, still staying the same. I would knock Michael Moore in 2 or 3 rounds.
Yeah. You know what? I think you're right. Moore, you know, he had good power. He was a southpaw, but he could not stand up to a heavyweight puncher.
Right.
I think you're right.
Heavy southpaw before I knocked out.
Now, Riddick, who would you say was the toughest I ever fought?
Unequivocally, Evander Holyfield.
Right. And you had a couple of nice battles with him. Which of the two fights do you think was the toughest
Nah, it was hard to break his will. Like the other guy, you get him with 4 or 5 shots, they would give up. But Evander, he just kept coming.
Mm-hmm. And he also is still out there boxing. Would you ever consider a rematch with him?
Absolutely. We would make history. I would love to fight him again.
That would be the cap of the trilogy, right? You each got
Riddick's up 2-1.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
No, Riddick will be up 3-1.
My one younger cousin was born the night that you won the title from Holyfield, and I wasn't allowed to win the fight. I had to go to the hospital all the time. So it's been almost 20 years, and I suppose it's a hard time.
Riddick, how did you first get into boxing?
We had to do an thing. I was in junior high school, about 12 years old, and a teacher brought it in the tape, and as a class, we had to do an essay. And the young man was so high on Joe Frazier, and I liked Ali. He was talking a whole lot of stuff, and the young man told me that, you know, Ali was a faggot. I said, man, stop playing. He said, well, if you like Ali, you're a faggot, too. And then it was time to rumble. And I've been fighting that for this.
Wow. So it was a little bit of an unplanned situation, I guess.
Right. It was Muhammad Ali, Joe Frazier, number 4. And Ali won by knockout. And then the speaker at the time said, man, you're pretty good with your hands. You like me to call the gym for you? I said, why, certainly. And she called the gym, and I've been boxing ever since.
Awesome. And what are your thoughts on the passing recently of Joe Frazier? Did you ever get a chance to meet him in Tarpon?
Oh, I've been spoken to Joe Frazier several times. God bless him and his family. You know, I'm sorry that, you know, he left us, you know.
All right. Yeah, it was...
Rick, yeah, one thing I wanted to talk to you about tonight, and we can tie this directly in with Smoking Joe Frazier. I have a very high respect for your former trainer, the late Eddie Futch, who I consider one of the greatest gentlemen and greatest trainers to ever walk the face of the earth. And it was his compassion in that Manila fight, saved Frazier in that 15th round. Tell me what it was like to train with a guy like Eddie, who was a small guy and talked very softly, but was one of the most respected guys in the sport.
Well, in all honesty, I called him Papa Smurf, but he was like a rattlesnake. So, you know, he was the type of guy who didn't play with you. He was very soft-spoken, but if you made him angry, he would, you know, lash out at you. I was training for the first Holyfield fight, and I was down to one sparring partner. And Papa Smurf said, well, you got to save this guy, so, you know, take it easy with him. I went out there showboat and playing with the guy, and I probably didn't want a three-point combination. He said, man, what did I tell you? I went back over to him, you know, very painfully, and as I approached him, threw a left hook at me. And, I kind of slipped the left hook, but he let me know he was not playing with me. And so I stopped, you know, playing, and I took care of the guy and, you know, made sure I didn't hurt him or knock him down or anything like that because I didn't want to deal with the left hook when I came back to the corner.
Yeah, he's definitely a great guy.
Nine, miss Papa.
I mean, with some of the trainers that they trained, yes, she's deep.
Say it again, you're breaking
up.
You're going to say that. I was going to say it, Riddick. Some of the trainers out there today, do you see great teachers like Eddie Futch anymore, or do you think the training is a lost art?
Absolutely not. They're not like Papa Smurf. I don't see the guys putting in the time or showing the guy to throw a left hook like they should. I don't see that. I've been to a whole lot of gyms, and you don't see that type of training anymore.
And how did he get the nickname Papa Smurf?
Well, because he reminded me so much of Papa Smurf on the Spurs. He was a little guy in stature, but he would fight a lion. You know what I mean? And he was very wise.
Cool. And as far as your comeback, is there anybody that you're working with right now, or are you looking for a trainer? Who's going to work with you?
Well, I have my own son coming for. Eddie Funk trained him, and he's training me, so it's like working with Papa Surfing thing, so that's what we're going to do. We're going to stick with him.
All right. And what would you say is your ultimate goal with the sport of boxing?
My ultimate goal is to fight.
Still there?
Did we lose him? So,
we might have. Yeah.
I know we're getting too bad.
But he just dropped off the call. He's in the system, so. It's not our fault, you know what I mean? With that one. I should call back in. Anyway, there's a couple interesting stories here that we can go over while we're waiting. I had not heard this until today, but there's a Russian boxer just died in the hospital after collapsing in the ring. Roman Simakov collapsed in the ring tonight during a title defense, died overnight of brain injuries.
Oh, geez.
So that's obviously probably going to bring back the debate about the safety of the sport.
I was talking about that today. We're talking about the Dooku King Ray Mancini fight.
Yep. Pavel Volak is retiring from boxing.
Yeah, he lost his rematch with what the hell is the guy's name? It's Delvin Rodriguez this past weekend.
Right. He says he has no regrets. He's leaving at a good time. Let's see what else we got here. The International Boxing Hall of Fame announced its 2012 class featuring Tommy Hearns. I'll get the whole list in a second. let's check on. See if we get our desk back. There he is. Hello.
Hello.
Can you guys? Yep, we're back. I guess we dropped you.
We're back.
A second, anyway. I was going to ask is that what do you enjoy most about boxing in general?
Well, I guess you know the fans. I miss the fans. The camaraderie. If you're training with a person. And things of that nature. I ain't going head to head, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, that's one thing. You meet a lot of interesting people. One thing I always noticed when I boxed a little bit in college, Tony and I both were actually supposed to fight each other at one point. My co-host here, that's how we got together on MySpace. We found each other, and then we ended up hosting the show together and doing the website. But you know, one thing that I always liked about being a boxer was just, having people look at you differently and talk about you differently and never mess with you. Always give you a certain respect that people that didn't fight didn't get.
Yeah, you know what I liked about them all? They would always, well, I can't. That's kind of a pretty dude right there. I used to like that part.
Mm-hmm. And looking back, is there any one moment in the sport that you would say is your absolute best moment?
I guess the first fight with Evander Holyfield, defeating him for the championship, that was my greatest moment.
Right. And what was that like? I mean, obviously, Holyfield was really in his prime back then, and he probably were the underdog going into that fight. So what was that like to overcome the odds?
Yeah, probably was. I was the underdog unequivocally. But Evander Graver, he put up a great fight. I mean, the guy was undefeated at the time. And I guess by him being such a great champion, he put up a great fight and that made me fight harder. So everything turned out just like I dreamt it to be.
And do you guys talk to this day, or are you still friends, or were you ever friends?
Oh, we were always friends and cordial with each other, but I guess, you know, as time goes on, you lose touch and things like that. So I haven't spoken to Daniel in about maybe 5 or 6 years.
Okay. But you've obviously probably followed his career, right?
You know, I haven't, but what I should is that every time he fights, I'm in his corner and things of that nature, you know?
Right.
Well, if you guys hook up another match between us, I'm game.
I could reach out to some people that do the send us PR and stuff and see what we can do about it.
All right, man. What's your match?
I think people would love that, you know, fourth fight. It would be better than a fourth fight between Manny and Marquez, right?
Yeah, Bo Holyfield 4. That would be great. He can even up, or I could run away with 3-1.
That was funny. We had Ray Mercer on the show about a month and a half ago, I think now. And we tried to set up a rematch between him and Kimbo Slice. But I actually reached out to Kimbo Slice's manager. And he said he was going to get back to me when he got back from France, but he never did. So I guess I had to remind him. But Ray Mercer wants his rematch.
Yeah, how was Ray doing? You know, he and our teammates in 88.
Yeah. Yeah, weren't you going to ask about that, Tony?
Yeah, I was. Because, in fact, the past month and a half, we've had, you're going to be our third medalist from the 88 Olympics. We had Ray Mercer, and we had Roy Jones just last week. I still rank the 88 Olympic team as the last really great U.S. Olympic team, and that was because that's when it was still real Olympic boxing, and that's when, you know, it was treated more like professional boxing because of the style of the fights. After Roy got screwed in that fight in Korea, you know, they changed the system they have now. Do you even follow any of the Olympic boxing anymore? And if you do, what do you think about it?
Well, I haven't for a while, but I must be honest with you. I believe the best team we ever had was the 76 Olympic team. We're reigning in.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've followed boxing a long time, but I'm going to be watching it from now on.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a boxing fan through and through, and I remember the 88 team, that's when I was first really getting into boxing, and my dad would buy me boxing magazines. I was 12 years old, and, you know, I would read the profiles on all the guys. You know, you, Roy Jones, Ray Mercer, Michael Carbajal, you know, Anthony Hamburg, all those good fighters. And when you turn pro, I couldn't wait to watch you guys fight on USA. It would be my fight.
Yeah, what's your outlook on the sport? Obviously, you know, there's a lot of people trying to say because of mixed martial arts, the sport of boxing is dead, and because of the Russians being the heavyweight champions and no American having that title, people are losing interest. You obviously must think differently because you're coming back to it. So, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, my goal is to bring every championship back to America. And first and foremost, but I think a lot of other guys, opposed to going to boxing, they're going to football, basketball, and other sports. I don't know why, but that's just the way it is.
Well, one reason could be, you know, that like Tony and I, when we were in college and boxed, we were only like, you know, a handful of schools that had boxing teams. And actually, when I went to freshman year at the Air Force Academy, it was my first experience boxing at all, competitively. And they had just cut out the mandatory program, because they used to have it mandatory for every freshman coming through would have to take boxing lessons and actually have at least one match. And they got rid of that because they were too worried about safety issues and stuff like that. Kids just want to do it.
If I knew you can go to college and box, I don't want to. I probably don't want to college. You know that?
Right.
I guess I got my degree in kicking.
You get your degree in what? I'm sorry, again.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, now we can hear you. What'd you say you got your degree in?
I kick assology.
I kick assology.
I would say my degree was ass whippingomics.
Ass whippingomics.
Hey, everybody. One question I wanted to ask you on a serious note. This is going back to your championship career. I was always unlucky when you were fighting Holyfield. When you had the first fight with him, which I wrote an article a couple of years ago on the greatest heavyweight title fights of all times, and I forget where I had you guys ranked, but it was within the top five, with fights like Frazier Ali 1 and 3, with fights like Holmes and Norton. That night, I was saying a little bit ago, and then we were kind of getting cut off, my younger cousin, she was just born that day. So my mom made me go to the hospital that night. I was like 16, maybe 17, I think 16. They made me go to the hospital, you know, to visit my aunt and visit the baby. So now my cousin, she's 19 years old, and I'm like, you know what? I still hold it against you that I had to miss the first Riddick Bowe Evander Holyfield fight live, you know, to come see you in the hospital. And then a month later, I had to go to your christening, and I had to miss an Eagles game. And then the next year, the night in Vegas with Fan Man, I had my homecoming dance. But I want to ask you about that. What was your initial reaction when you saw a guy parachute into the ring?
Well, actually, I think it was a conspiracy. But I think that kid crossed me in a fight. No, because I had to wait 20 minutes for the warm up.
I mean,
it's your only loss. You know, you can't change that, and it's one of those things that you have a legitimate argument that they should have done it, treated it differently. But it's unfortunate. But obviously, you know, you got the best of them in the other two fights, so you can always say that, right? Now, what do you do outside the sport of boxing to keep yourself entertained?
Well, I don't do much at all. I'm with my wife and my daughter all day, every day. If I'm not training, so I'm just taking it easy.
Mm-hmm. And when did you decide to actually come back and get serious about it?
Well, I look at the heavyweight division, and like you say, the heavyweight championships are in Europe somewhere, and they should be over in America. And the heavyweight division is weak. This is an opportunity for me to take, so I can, you know, get on board with their needs.
Right.
And bring the championship back to America.
So would you be interested in getting a fight with the Klitschko's?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Which one would you rather face first, Vladimir or what's the other one, Tony? Vitaly. You want to fight Vitaly? Huh?
I don't care. I mean, I don't care how I fight them. I'm what order in, but I know I could beat both of them.
Yeah. Well, they won't fight each other, so nobody's going to unify the titles by fighting them, I guess.
The other one will come in and revenge his boss, and I'll knock him out.
And have you actually looked for an opponent for your first fight, though? anybody in the works for that? Your first fight back from comeback.
Yeah. And then when I say who is, you're not going to believe me. Guess who is? It's somebody I can walk. Somebody I can walk. Guess who?
Know.
You.
Not me. You want to box me?
Oh, absolutely.
I'm getting up there to heavyweight, so I might be able to, but I'll still get my ass kicked, but hey.
I live differently, because that's what you do. So, did you ever fight pro?
No, I never did, but actually, I almost had a chance to spar with James Toney's cousin at one point. That was probably as close as I ever got to going pro. But the last boxing match I had, actually, it was a sparring session, really, against a kid who won the New England Golden Gloves at 185 pounds a couple of years ago. And actually, it was almost exactly 2 years ago, around now, that I boxed him, and he broke my rib. Ooh. With a body shot. And it's the first time I ever went down in any boxing match. I went down on one knee, took a couple breaths, got back up, and kept fighting. But man, that woke me up.
So what was his name? What's his name?
He was from New England, from the Brockton area. I want to say his name is Alex Terry or something like that.
Well, I say what was up. I'm going to look at Alex Terry still fighting. He may be my first opponent. I'm going to pan back for you.
Yeah. He's a 185er, though. He probably can't hang with the heavyweights. But he was good. He's a tall kid. I knew he was serious about boxing. The next time I saw him, they had a smoker event at the gym he fights out of. And he had this unbelievable tattoo on his shoulder of the speed bag set up and then a big boxing glove underneath it. So it says, you're literally wearing the sport on your sleeve now. You got to make something of it. But it was a pretty good exchange. We had a couple of rounds. But I don't think I'll ever go pro, but I definitely would like to get back into the amateurs. So if you're ever in New England and you need a sparring partner up in New Hampshire, I'll go in there. I might not survive, but I'll go in there. But anyway, we're wrapping up. We're getting about 4 minutes to the end of the show here. Is there anybody that you want to thank or give a shout-out to, or any final thoughts?
I want to give a shout-out.
How long have you been married?
My daughter, Mark.
How long have you been married?
I've been married 12 years.
Oh, good. That's hard to do these days. Stay married. So more power to you. But we definitely enjoyed we definitely enjoyed having you on the show, talking with you, and we'll keep in touch and have your publicist there send us whatever you got on when you get your first fight signed, and we'll put it up on the site and definitely keep you in mind for a future show. Come back.
Okay, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot.
All right, God bless you.
You too.
Have
a good
night. Ready? Best of luck to you. Okay, thanks a lot.
And Rich, it looks like we're down to our last minute, so.
Yes, we are. So, folks, we're going to sign off until next week. We have no guest as of yet, but we will definitely find one or two. And
I'm going to email that girl today again, Brittany Rogers, the one that I went to the show with a few months ago. And,
sure.
If she's available.
Okay. Well, that was Riddick Bowe.
All
right. That was Riddick Bowe. We finally got him on, and turned out to be pretty good. He wants to fight me on his first fight. So I don't know if that's going to happen, but it would be nice to to say I fought Riddick Bowe. Anyway, Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron is over and out here, and we will see everybody next week. Thanks for stopping by.
All right. I'm the tornado, and I'm out, Pete.